This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with us. You can check out the website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about our show or would like us to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Tonight, we begin the show with a discussion on legislation that the City Council is considering to establish a retirement savings program for private sector workers. Joining us by phone is City Council member Ben Kalos of Manhattan. He is chair of the Committee on Contracts. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me on the show, and thank you for all the work that DC 37 members do to run our city. Politicians come and go. It's the DC 37 members that keep our government going.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. let's talk about this bill. What is the problem that this bill is addressing?
Over a million private sector workers in New York City don't have any access to retirement plans through their employers, and that's creating a retirement deficit in the trillions, which is measured by the amount between what people need to save to retirement and what they actually have. And one of the things that we've seen is a little bit of public sector envy, where people in the private sector who don't even have access to these retirement accounts start to be envious of people in the public sector who have made sacrifices in terms of salary to have the ability to retire. And I'm hoping that by doing this, not only can we help people to retire, but we can help remind everyone that everyone should be able to have a right to retire.
You know, there's a fellow named Stephen Greenhouse, used to be the labor reporter for the New York Times, and he's just written a book about the labor movement. And he said, his mother said to him, once upon a time, non-union folks would say, that guy's in a union, I gotta get into a union. And now they say, too often, that guy's in a union, why does he have all that stuff that a union gives him? This idea that that what was negotiated for workers was once something that people wanted to be part of, and through some weird prism, that has become resentment towards what other folks have. This is addressing that in some way?
This actually stems directly from that. I'm a union-side labor lawyer, and I was working at a law firm called Garlick, Kravitz, and Listhouse. We had the opportunity to represent the operating engineers during the GM's first bankruptcy, where they spun off a lot of their plants into a company called Delphi. And in a little less than 5 years, those companies all declared bankruptcy, and somehow they had tens of millions of dollars to pay their executives and pay them golden parachutes right. for running the company into the ground. But they were using the bankruptcy as a tool to bust the United Auto Workers and the operating engineers and everyone else who were in those plants, and saying, oh, even though you spent your entire life working for us for the promise of this pension, having done collective bargaining, I can tell you that when you're at that table, you're always balancing current pay versus retirement and protecting those defined benefits and people knowing that they're going to be able to retire on a piece of what they've been making. And so I know those sacrifices firsthand. And so when I saw Delphi try to break out of their pension obligations, that inspired me into a life in public service and representing my brothers and sisters in labor in elected office. And so what we're hoping to do here is along those lines is change the law so it actually helps people save for retirement.
Now, this is not, to be clear, this doesn't require the employer to contribute anything. It doesn't require the city to contribute anything. It doesn't even require the employee to participate, correct? This is creating a structure by which people can save for retirement.
Correct. So this is a voluntary program. It's an auto IRA, which means anyone at an employer with 10 or more employees that didn't already offer a retirement plan would be auto-enrolled, and they would have 3% of their paycheck deducted each month, and the city would manage the fund. It would be a low-fee fund, so it wouldn't really cost people anything. It wouldn't cost the employer anything, and it would mean that more people would be saving for retirement.
And has this been done elsewhere?
Absolutely. 10 other states and one other city have already passed laws. And we actually had testimony from Oregon Saves, where they have a program that's been up and running since 2017. They've already signed up 3,200 employers. They've established 50,000 accounts for new savers, and they've got a participation rate of 70%, and they've already saved $30 million in just 2 years. And the monthly contributions are actually approaching $4 million a month and increasing. And the program is already self-sufficient, so it's good news, and it's a great model.
Well, I know when you announced on the steps of City Hall that this, when you introduced this legislation, I know that DC 37 was there with you to support this, because this retirement, at the beginning you spelled out the problem with retirement savings and the huge gap between what people have and what people need to have to have retirement security. Hopefully this is a step in that direction, to get people the ability to save for retirement. Council member, I ask this question of every elected official who comes on this show. How did you get into public service?
I think you heard a little bit of the story during the Delphi bankruptcy. And it really inspired me to go into public service to be a voice for labor in government. I had the opportunity to serve as chief of staff to Assemblymember Jonathan Bing. And when I had an opportunity in my district to run, I did. And I had support early on from one of the new locals at DC 37, DC 1707.
Mm-hmm.
And they got me there, and I've been fighting for labor ever since. I was actually, one of my proudest moments was being able to support DC 1707, their president Kim Medina, and Henry Garrido, the executive director of DC 37, as we announced that we had finally achieved salary parity for our local 1707 members who were working in pre-K but weren't earning the same amount as people who were at public schools. So that was a little bit of it, and it's just been an honor and a privilege to be fighting for working families in our city.
We're talking with Councilmember Ben Kalos of Manhattan. He's the chair of the Committee on Contracts. You've been a council member since 2013. How long have you been the chair on the Committee on Contracts, and what is your take, and we've got just a few minutes on this, but what is your take on the procurement process and progress we've made on making that an easier process?
I just started in the Committee on Contracts in April of this year. And I think that procurement in our city is very broken. I don't know anyone who tells me, oh, doing business with the city is easy or a good thing. And for my mind, I'm concerned about when the government is outsourcing work that city employees could be doing faster, better, and for less money. And when we're outsourcing it to for-profit companies so that somebody can give a profit, especially when those people give campaign contributions. And so I've been very focused on a local law 63 and section 312 of the city charter. It's something I read when I read through the entire charter to testify at the Charter Revision Commission. And that entire section talks about every time that the city puts out a contract, they have to do an analysis to see whether or not they are outsourcing or displacing or otherwise hurting city workers. And I'm actually hoping that any of your listeners at DC 37, if they are at a city agency and they see some of their jobs being outsourced, that they should please call me at 212-860-1950 or email me at contracts@benkalos.com to report it to me so we can look into it and make sure that we're not displacing any city workers and that we're doing work faster, better, and for less money.
Let me ask you this again. Give me those phone numbers again, because whoever was listening just went running and didn't get it, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to say it one more time.
212-860-1950. And the email is contracts with an S at benkalos, K-A-L-L-O-S .com.
We're talking with Councilmember Ben Kalos. He is the chair of the Committee on Contracts. When we were talking about a new bill that the City Council is considering to establish a retirement savings program for private sector workers. Anything else that we should have asked you about this bill and what the process is for making this thing happen?
We need as many sponsors in the City Council as possible. I'm pushing this legislation. One of the co-prime sponsors who has a partner bill is a former labor leader and chair of the Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus, I. Danique Miller. But we need more sponsors, so if you're listening to this, you should call your local council member and ask them to sign on to this legislation and ask the speaker to pass it and let the mayor's office know that you're actually happy with him about this and that he should continue pushing for it. But we need all hands on deck to make this a reality.
Council member, you're welcome to come back anytime to talk to us about the state of the city. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to all the members at DC 37. I hope to get some calls and emails and to be able to work with you on making our city better.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. Joining us now is Carla Walter, who is the director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. She is the author of a recently released report on public sector training partnerships. She joins us now by phone from Washington, D.C. welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's take a step back. What is the American Worker Project, and what is the Center for American Progress?
Sure. Well, the Center for American Progress is a left-leaning think tank located here in Washington, D.C., that advocates in a variety of policies from workers' rights and ensuring that workers are paid higher wages to everything from the ongoing debate over impeachment.
Neera Tanden is the head of the Center for American Progress, and
yes, she's
a feisty lady who's on a lot of talk shows, right?
She certainly does. She is a great leader. At the American Worker Project specifically, we focus on raising the wages and benefits of American workers, and that comes through essential government protections like minimum wage and prevailing wage protections, but also about reasserting the right of workers to join unions and collectively bargain in the American economy. We think that that's a critical reform that, well, we've been waiting years and years for the government to get right, is essential to upholding strong rights for workers in our economy and in our democracy.
It seems to me, you know, when Barack Obama was elected president, unions in America had a 43% favorable public opinion. And it seems to me that over the last decade, there has been a concerted effort by labor and by progressives to work together to talk about American workers. Is that your sense?
I think so. I think that particularly among young workers, we see, but all workers, we see that their understanding of the importance of unions is growing. I think that there is the very uplifting side that we see that unions are squarely showing that they're on the side of communities through things, well, they always have been, but through movements like bargaining for the common good, really centering bargaining even around their demands for better standards for communities. But then we also see that I think a lot of this is also spurred by the fact that we've had an economic recovery now where workers have been left behind. Far too many workers haven't seen their pay raise. They are seeing that work is becoming more unstable. And I think that we're at a moment where so many workers, not just workers earning lowest wage, but workers throughout the middle class, know that their economic future is really reliant on having some sort of collective voice.
And there is, throughout all this, however, as we talk about the changing times in which we live, there is, I think, too much complacency on the idea that, well, times have changed, we have a different kind of economy, and that folks are just going to have to figure out some other way of making a living or, you know, supporting families. That's a fallacy that is difficult to confront sometimes.
Yeah, I think that sometimes we get involved in these conversations about the future of work, and it is all... The talking points are that change is inevitable and it will inevitably be worse for workers. And I think that these are the sorts of things we've seen throughout our history as these talking points that are used to push back against any sorts of standards or voice for workers. You know, it doesn't sound so different hearing what people say about the gig economy today as what people said about automation of auto manufacturing.
Right.
You know, 80 years ago. So I think that we have to recognize for what it is and say we really have choices here about what work looks like in the future, and not making a choice is a choice as well.
Now let's talk about the report. This report is on public sector training partnerships, and that is certainly something that AFSCME and DC 37 are interested. What did the report find?
Well, I think what the report finds is that, well, often when policymakers start talking about these training partnerships, they focus on the private sector. Think about construction worker apprenticeships that provide pathways to the middle class for workers. But really, public sector unions have been working more quietly with city and state employers for a long time and are increasingly focused on partnering with government employers on innovative new training partnerships. And by lifting up a number of examples, we show that this is really a win-win win for all players involved. For workers, union involvement helps ensure that training is of high quality, that it's connected to industry-recognized credentials, and it allows these sorts of career advancement opportunities. We see this for nurses in terms of career advancement, for workers entering sanitation collection fields and obtaining their commercial driver's license through apprenticeships, and even for state employees getting trained on benefits navigation, whether it be retirement benefits and healthcare benefits. Inclusion of worker voice really means that workers are getting trained in what they need, not just what employers think they need, and that it allows workers to really lead on these sorts of things. Moreover, we see that unions and employers are really focused on ensuring that the diversity of the public workforce really reflects the diversity of the communities they serve. And finally, employers are increasingly interested in partnering with these sorts of partnerships to deal with high turnover rates due to boomer retirements, baby boomer retirements, and also attracting public sector workers as the private sector really heats up. And there are studies that show that these partnerships aren't just effective at raising quality for public sector workers, but also of the end result. So, for example, teachers who are trained through these sorts of partnerships not only have their turnover reduced because they're happier on the job and have the skills they need, but there's also this sort of boost in student achievement. So for all these reasons, we think that it's really a ripe time to start discussing these sorts of partnerships and shining a light on these sorts of partnerships.
And do governments need to be convinced of this?
I think that governments don't necessarily need to be convinced of this on a micro scale. If they have trouble attracting nurses to a specific field, they might say, okay, well, how are we going to work with our union if they have a strong union on doing these sorts of things? But what they do need to be convinced of is thinking about this as a workforce strategy writ large. And for those governments that are really now in this post-Janus moment thinking about how do we put our finger on the side of public sector unions, thinking about these as a tool to not just raise standards for workers and raise standards for government, but also help to ensure that participants understand the value of a union and understand the value of the union in bringing these sorts of opportunities to the fore.
Post-Janus being the era in which the Supreme Court, the era after the Supreme Court has decided to make right to work the law of the land for public sector employees.
Yes. And so what we see exactly, what we see is that New York City has a great example of the DUITT fellowship that's allowing tech workers to get trained and enter into city employment. And there's other sorts of labor management training partnerships happening across the country. And these provide these tangible examples to workers of the benefit of unionization and then thereby helps to sustain public sector unions, even in this new right to work environment for public sector workers.
That DUIT program that you were just talking about, that's ours. I mean, that's DC-37.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about how that program came about.
So it arose from this fairly unique situation where New York City was having to fill hundreds of IT positions that were previously contracted out to a company that was found to have defrauded the government for hundreds of millions of dollars.
And the idea of that whole program was to increase efficiency in the city workforce. And they turned out to be the most inefficient system that you could possibly come up with, right?
It certainly did. And so there was this real opportunity for the union to come to the table and say, okay, well, let's contract these jobs back in and let's make sure that we do it in the right way, not just to make sure that they're good high-wage union jobs, but we're getting workers in who are recent CUNY grads who come from more diverse backgrounds, and to train these workers up so that they see the value of city employment, that they see the value of the union, and they are willing to stick around in the long term, because, you know, it's not, well, this was sort of a unique situation for New York City. Lots of cities and states are dealing with having to attract and retain tech workers when the private sector and the, you know, the dream of the startup is calling.
And this resulted in the creation of more than 700 full-time non-competitive IT positions at city agencies. So that was a big move. I know that Henry Garrido, who's the District Council 37 Executive Director, believes that this partnership will help foster loyalty to the union, particularly among younger workers, and that it demonstrates, as you just said, that it's playing an essential role in making creating access to good jobs.
Yes, certainly. And I think that when we look internationally, we see that these sorts of fellowships, these sorts of administration of public goods are really key in sustaining strong membership. So, for example, looking across the globe, most countries have been in decline in terms of their unionization rates for the past three decades. But there's a handful of countries that haven't had this problem. In those countries, the unions play a key role in helping workers access unemployment insurance benefits. Workers don't have to get their UI through the union, but the union does a better job of it. And so when unions access those benefits through the union, they also get a positive view of what the union's doing in their lives and then become more likely to join the union and stick with the union. So we think that training in the United States context can play a very similar role.
We're talking with Carla Walter. She is the author of a recently released report on public sector training partnerships. For more on this report, now, where can folks access this report? I guess at the Center for American Progress website. Is that correct?
Exactly. www.americanprogress.org.
And as I say, Carla Walter is the director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. She is the author of this recently released report on public sector training partnerships. And I want to thank you for joining us this evening. And I look forward to continued conversations as we this is a fascinating area. This is right in with what we have been saying at the union about the need to build the workforce of tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's just about all the time we have for this show. Before we go, I want to take just a little bit of time for a few messages. If you're a veteran interested in purchasing a home, come to DC 37's Veteran Home Financing Workshop Thursday, October 10th at 5:30 p.m. at 125 Barclay Street. To register and for details, please email Raul Rodriguez. That's R-A-U-L. RODRIQEZ at DC37.net. And the education program at DC37 will be holding a 3-day financial empowerment workshop Thursdays, October 10th, 17th, and 24th at 6 p.m. There will be workshops on resume writing, interview techniques, and test-taking strategies this month and also next month in November. So please, for information on registration, location, and details, visit www.dc37.net or call 212-815-1700. I want to thank my guests, Councilmember Ben Kalos of Manhattan and Carla Walter, who was the director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. If you have any comments about today's show or any of our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We appreciate your feedback. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The sound engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.